the recording, and my screen is about to get very big, so you can go back to gallery view, and that puts everybody back on the box. Okay, and now share screen for my little prep stuff. Okay, we're good. Everybody there? Everybody with us? Can you all see the screen?
Yep. Did you want to mute?
Yeah, we'll mute everybody if we need to. See you and welcome. What else is here? Great, Stanley, it's great to see you. You've got audio on two devices, so that's what's going on.
Trying to fix this. Hang on.
No problem.
Stanley, are you there? Did Stan make it?
Yeah, he made it. He's here. He's here twice. That's what's causing the loop feedback.
Wonderful.
All right. Very good. Let's jump in. So I apologize for the few week break that we had over the last couple of weeks. I had a very powerful. Oops, one second. What I forgot to do? I forgot to turn on my mic. I don't know how you're hearing me. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah. Very loud and clear.
All right. Well, let's see if this. Forgot to turn on my mic. Okay. It's any better. Okay. Stanley, welcome. Nice to see you.
Good to see you too, Rabbi. How are you?
Thank God. All right. It's a late hour in Toronto. I don't know if any of you, did you get to the rally in Ottawa today?
My daughter went and my grandchildren went. I was at work, but the speeches were amazing.
The bus company
Really powerful.
the bus company less so.
The bus company, oh, you heard about it.
Yes, I heard they made a page out of the Detroit story and stood them all up. But
yeah.
all right,
Mashallah.
I'm glad that they had it. That's very important. All right, one of these days I just did a program last night on a photo story of the mission that I just came back from Israel on. And 3 days of rabbinic solidarity missions. That was very powerful. And sort of still trying to process all of that. So it's an intense time.
These were North American rabbis mostly, or
primarily, although it was an RCA. So it was basically not necessarily, North American rabbis. But there was some, it was a couple of missions over a couple of weeks. All right, let's get into business. Talk about something I know something about. Or maybe not. I'm putting everybody on a temporary mute just to take out some background noise. Feel free to unmute as you wish. So we were talking about Perek Yud Zayin before we had a few weeks break. And Perek Yud Zayin in Shmuel Bet is the moment in which more or less sort of the transition between Avshalom's rebellion and Achitophel, who joins as the general, who joins Avshalom in rebellion against David. David goes running from the palace. Those sort of the lead up chapters, and then at the sort of the height of this, or the climax of the story, Achitophel counsels Avshalom to go and take out David in a kind of a surprise attack. Hushai, on the other hand, who is David's spy, counsels Avshalom to wait and gather all the army together and kind of give, intending to give David some time to escape. And Avshalom takes the advice of Hushai, which is, for David's sake, a lifesaver, for Avshalom's sake, a critical mistake. And you can see that in Pasuk Yudalet. Chooses Avshalom Hushai's advice over Achitophel, and then in the same pasuk, it's Hashem tzivah lafer atzat Achitophel atavah lavavu avi Hashem al Avshalom hara'ah. that this was intended for God to, by God, to kind of ordain the defeat of Avshalom. And then the rest of the parak kind of shifts our focus to Hushai, who goes and takes the two sons of the Kohanim, Yehonatan and Achimatz, and uses them to inform David that Avshalom is on his way and that David should escape across the Yarden. David does, in fact, do that. There's a whole story we went through about how Yehonatan and Achimatz managed to escape by hiding in the well in Bachurim. We talked about that on the parallel to the story of Rahab and Yeshua, the Yeshua spies. And David takes the entire people, gets the message, Vayakum David b'chalam ha-shirito v'yavru ta-yarden. They cross over the Jordan, and they escape to the area of Machanaim, just over on the other side of the Yabok River. We talked about the significance of Machanaim. V'David ba Machanaima. V'avshalom avar ta-yarden hu v'chol ish Yisrael imo. So David comes to Machanaim, crosses the Yarden overnight with all of his 600 people and the from Yishai Giti and a few other Yitai Giti and a few other people who are with him, crosses over the Yarden and encamps at an area known as Machanaim, which is just on the edge of the river Yabok. It's where Yaakov has his famous, he's on his way back from Laban's house, he has his famous vision where he sees Machane Elokim, he sees a vision of angels. That story in Parashat Vayetze is referenced here as well. And Avshalom begins to gather his army together. And so he has to replace Achitophel as the general. But Amasa sam Avshalom tachad Yoav al hatzava. He places Amasa over the army. We had in the last year that we had before the break, we had a discussion of who Amasa is and his relationship to Avigail, Avigail bat Nachash. We're going to not rehash that for now. Vayichan Yisrael v'Avshalom Eretz HaGilad. So the stage is set. David is in Machanaim, and Avshalom is in Eretz HaGilad, and the two armies are gathering forces to face off in what will eventually be the final battlefield between David and Avshalom in a major battle known as the Battle of Yar Ephraim. More or less, I believe that's where we left off. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay. Shrugging shoulders doesn't help me. but that's more or less where I think we left off. And if we left off anywhere else, that's just tough because I'm giving this year. So I can start wherever I want. All right. Let's jump into a couple of things. First of all, just by way of observation of this chapter, it's why one of the things that we find it's fascinating to me in Tanakh is not only the content is significant, but sometimes even the structure of a story, even just textually, the structure of a story is very significant. There are 28, 29 psukim in this chapter, and we haven't read the last three. I'll come back to that in a second. But there are 29 psukim in this chapter, more or less 30 chapters. 30 verses, dead center of this chapter, if there are 30 psukim, would be pasuk yudalot tetvav, 29 psukim, right, more or less? Okay. If I looked at this chapter from a perspective of themes, okay, just to kind of break it down, it starts with Avshalom taking counsel with Achitophel, Avshalom taking counsel with Hushai, Avshalom making a decision to take Hushai's advice over Avshalom's. Then the Hushai informs Yonatan and Achimatz. Yonatan and Achimatz go and inform David. David escapes with his life to Machanaim. From a perspective of the subject matter, this chapter takes place in two arenas. Arena number one is the palace of Avshalom. Avshalom's counsel with Achitophel, Avshalom's counsel with Hushai, Avshalom's deliberation. Arena number two is the domain of David. Yonatan and Achimaatz running to David, informing David of what's going on. David running across the river to Machanaim and getting there overnight. The friends, we haven't gotten to these psukim, but we read it the first time. Right, the friends, Shobi ben Nachash ben Amat Nehemon, Machir ben Amiyam, and from Lodavar, Bazilai Giladim and Oglim, the three friends who come to David to bring him supplies because he's tired, he's weak, he's weary, the army needs something to eat. Ki amru ha'am ra'ev ra'ef tzameh b'midbar. This chapter divides very powerfully between two arenas, Avshalom and David. Correct? What's the transition point between them? Interesting. The transition point between them is that moment when Avshalom decides to take the counsel of Hushai over the counsel of Avshalom. Of Achitophel, and then Hushai goes to run to Yonatan and Aviatar to tell him to go to David. In other words, Pasuk Yudalid is exactly the transition point between these two arenas of the chapter. Everybody with me? Why is that significant? So you see this little pay and this little samach, this little paragraph break in the in a text of a Tanakh that has kind of it laid out graphically, this is a paragraph break. I want to show you something interesting. Here is a copy of the same chapter. I haven't changed the text at all. I've just done something very unfair, which is I've used a computer to copy and paste the text. Okay? And here's what it comes up with. Okay, so here is a... Can you see the screen? Don't worry if it's too small to read. Not my issue. I just wanted to see this chapter. Pasuk Aleph through Pasuk Yud Gimel. Everything on this side of the chart, on the right side column, Achitophel and Avshalom, it's what we called this Council of Achitophel. Second paragraph, the Council of Hushai. The third paragraph, Avshalom decides to go and counsel and take advice from Hushai. Hushai counsels Avshalom differently than Achitophel. And then Pasuk Yudalad, Avshalom chooses to take the advice of Hushai over Achitophel, turning point. Why? Because God made it so. Vashem tziva lafer tatzat Achitophel. God's hand in the story. From Pasuk Tetvav, Vayomer Hushai al Tzadok v'el Avyatar, tells the sons, Yonatan and Achimatz, to go and tell David. They go, they find themselves discovered, they have to hide in a well. They end up escaping from that well. They go to David. David crosses over to Machanayim. Avshalom comes to Gilad. Everything else is the arena of David. This half of the chapter is the arena of Avshalom. This half of the chapter is the arena of David. It's very divided. It's very neat. Right? Structurally, it's very neat. And I think that that's not an accident, especially because this parak, this pasuk Yudalid, literally divides in the middle, 13 psukim before, and 15 to 29, the 14, 15 psukim afterwards. In other words, the chapter, the story divides almost equally between the two arenas, almost happening simultaneously. They're not happening simultaneously, but you get that impression that there's two parts of the story. This is what we would call what I would call a turning point. You can see it visually. It's very powerful. The turning point in the story is when Avshalom chooses to follow the advice of Hushai over Achitophel, which enables David both to buy the time he needs to escape and to gather the army he needs to conquer Avshalom. And at the same time, we see the hand of God. It's the only pasuk in which we have a reference to God's actions in this whole chapter. Behind the scenes, God is enabling David to escape and to reposition himself in a position of authority and power. And sort of this whole chapter kind of transitions us in this fashion. So I when I realized that this Pasuk Yudalid in the middle is a kind of a bridge between these two arenas, the arena of the palace of Shalom and the fields of David, and you get that sense that if things had happened slightly differently, if Avshalom had chosen to follow the advice of Achitophel instead of Hushai, we wouldn't have this half of the chapter. The story would have been over. Avshalom would have taken his 12,000 men, found David hiding in the hills of Judah, and David's story would have been over. And so that moment when he chooses to follow Hushai, that moment when Hashem is involved in the process, is all it takes to shift the center of gravity from the rebellion of Avshalom, David's flight from the palace, David on the run, David in the hills, David in hiding once again. You kind of have this deja vu. Here's Shaul chasing after David, and David is on the run. Here's Avshalom chasing after David, David's on the run. And you sense that it's all happening all over again. And then suddenly the table turns, and suddenly the center of gravity shifts. And now David is in the driver's seat, and David is gathering an army at Machanaim. And we already talked about the significance of the place, Bachurim, where the well was, and the possibility that David is gathering friends in the most unlikely places, right? Bachurim is the home of Palti ben Laish, who is the first husband of Michal, and all of that carries with it. So David is, so this transition is very significant for us in terms of the nature of the story. That's one part of the picture. The other part of the picture is just to understand where they are. I couldn't find a really good map. All kinds of different maps that are part of the story. This is the map from Herzog and the Google map that identifies Machanaim here along the river. And north of it, the area of the Gilad, and everything in the middle, this mountain region here with a little bit of green, this is an area known as, well, it's called the Gilad, but for our story, it will be known as Yar Ephraim, the forest of Ephraim. We'll come to that story in a minute. There are various other possibilities as to where Machanaim is, just to show you on this map, and they're all from different places, right? This map has Machanaim much further north from the Yabok River. And Gilad, where Shaul is here in Yavesh Gilad, so they're much closer than they are depicted in this map. Right? You can see the distance here is a little bit further apart. This is also another map that has Machanaim further north. It's no surprise it's taken from the same place. Okay. So why is the location significant for us? Why is this, what's going on here? So I want to come back to the story. Let's go back to the text for a minute. Let's go back to the text. I'm going to read the last couple of verses of this chapter now. We're up to Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayi kivot David Machanaima. David reaches this area called Machanaim. Either Machanaim is either along the Yabok River, which is what I suspect is the case, right? You have him here along the Yabok River, or it's a little bit further north in this area near the Gilad. In either case, he comes to Machanaim, and he's greeted, and Avshalom is going to gather his forces in the area of the Gilad. He's greeted in Machanaim by three individuals. Shovi ben Nachash Miramat ben Amon, Mechir ben Amiel from Lodavar, and Barzillai Giladi Miroglim. We have not identified any of these three individuals yet. That's our agenda for tonight. But to understand the significance of who we are, I want to see the whole context. They bring David supplies. Mishkav v'sapot uchliot zer v'chitim usurim v'kemach v'kali ufor v'adashim v'kali udvash v'chema v'tzon u'shvot bakar. All of these supplies, beds, basins, vessels, wheat, barley, meat, corn, beans, lentils, curd, sheep, cheese, whatever you need. Why? Gishu l'David v'la'am asher ito le'echol, ki amru. They brought all this food and provisions and beds for the people, because the army was on the run. The army was David and his people were running from the hills. They just crossed over the Yarden and moved into the. They were hiding. People are hungry. They're faint. They're thirsty. They're in the wilderness. They need supplies. right? Sort of reminiscent, kind of a very powerful observation that one of the first things that the soldiers on the border of Gaza called out, sent messages to people was that they were literally in the first days after October 7th, as the army was, as the Miluimnikim were called up, there were 100,000, 200,000 along the edge of the Gaza border. They didn't have any beds to sleep on. They didn't have any sleeping bags. So there was this call out to people to send mattresses. Right. Remember that in the early days of the campaign. Anyway, it just kind of hit me that the first thing these people brought up, it was mishkav, was beds, sleeping bags, something to sleep on. You have an entire army there in the hills. They need supplies. You can just imagine David is literally on the run for the second time in his life. Shaul chased him into the hills. He had he had to gather around him that band of 400 men that came later. He was hiding from by himself. He was being chased by Shaul. He was being accused of treason. He was trying to, and you can just imagine David now for the second time in exactly the same mindset, in exactly the same moment. Avshalom has taken over his kingdom. Avshalom has accused him of treason. Avshalom has chased him from the palace, and he's on the run. But unlike being on the run from Shaul, David gets to his first location and suddenly he has friends. He has friends. He has people who come to him with all kinds of supplies to provide for him, for his people, for his army. He has friends. He has supporters. He is not, David is not the same place that he was in the days of Shaul. How significant that is, we'll see in a second. But To process it, I want to take us one step further into a couple of psukim into Parak Yud Chet. Vayifkod David et ha'am asher ito. Avshalom's army is over the hill. So David took a census, prepared his army. A mifkad is always a military context. Vayifkod David et ha'am asher ito. Vayasem alehem sarei alafim misrei meyot, took his army, divided into yechidot and into gedud, however you divide an army into various levels, sarei alafim misrei meyot, thousands, captains over hundreds and captains over thousands. It's a hierarchy, a command structure, typical classical terminology for an army. And then Vayishalach David et ha'am ha'shlishit biyad Yoav, ha'shlishit biyad Avishai ben Tzruyach, Yoav, ha'shlishit biyad Itai Giti. He prepares the army strategy and the attack strategy against Avshalom, divides his army into three units, each one headed by one of his generals. It's a classic strategic planning for an offensive against an enemy, in this case, Avshalom. And he divides his army into three. The three generals at his hand are the two sons of Tzruyah, the two Yoav and Avishai, as well as the newest general to join his group, Itai Hagiti. Vayomer Hamelech Laam Yatzo Etzei Gam Ani Imachem. I'm going with you into battle. And when we look at Perek Yud Chet in detail, we'll look at how strange that request is for David to say, "I want to go with you into battle." The people refuse to let him. But I want to pick up one observation from this conversation, and that is the size of David's army. Vayomer Haam. No, David, you're not coming with us. Why are you not coming with us? One second, I just missed a page. Why are you not coming with us? If one of us flee, right? If somebody in the army gets taken out or flees, nobody cares. One person, two people. Even if half of us die in battle, it doesn't change the course of the war. Whereas, atak kamonu asara alafim. But you are like, this is an interesting ayin aleph issue, whether it's ayin or aleph, but that's not an issue. But you are like equal to us at 10,000. V'ata tov ki yetiel lanu me'ir lazor. Better that you stay in the city ready to help. And from this verse, the Mefarshim deduce that the size of David's army at this moment is at least twice 10,000. Because their response to David is, if half the army gets taken out, that's 10,000 soldiers, but you by yourself are equal to those 10,000. Which means that the army is at least 20,000 people. So you understand why these three individuals have to bring, right? Shovi ben Nachash, where are we? Shovi ben Nachash, Machir ben Miel, Gilati, whoever they are, they bring supplies. They don't bring just a couple of cans of corn. They're bringing supplies to an army which has swelled to the size of, right, a couple of psukim later, 20,000 people. That's an extraordinary moment. And so when you think about David's army opposite Shaul, Avshalom's army, how big is Avshalom's army? How big was Avshalom's army going to get? I don't need a number. I just need a magnitude. 20 people, 12,000 people, 100,000 people. How big was Avshalom's army going to get?
12,000?
Well, Achitofel had suggested 12,000, remember. Yomar Achitofel, of Koran, 12,000 ish. Hushai, on the other hand, suggested to Avshalom to take, don't underestimate David, he's a great warrior, etc. And therefore he says, Yasof, Heasof, Yasef, Alecha, Ko Yisrael, Midan, V'ad Be'sheva, Kachol Asher, Alayam, Larov. Go gather all of the army of Israel from north to south, from Dan to Be'sheva. It's like the sea of the multitudes that you can find for battle. Fanecha, Ochim, Lakrav. Shalom was talking about, Hushai was talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, right? The largest army you can master together. We never get a sense of their numbers, but it is, it's certainly going to be larger than the army of David, and David's army is 20,000. So we're really talking about an enormous battle, and David is preparing for that moment. Where is this battle going to take place? It's going to take place in a very interesting place. Pasuk Vav, in Perek Yilchet, Vayetze Ha'am Asadeh Likrat Yisrael, the two armies go into battle, Vatehi HaMilchama B'Yar Ephraim. The war takes place in a place, in an area known as the Forest of Ephraim, Yar Ephraim. So I want to stop for a second and just make an observation about this location, Yar Ephraim. And this is the showdown. This is the Gilad. This is Machanaim. Here is more or less in this area here is referred to as Yar Ephraim. To get a sense of it, I want to take a look at the tribal division of the land of Israel. This is Yerushalayim here, Judah south of Yerushalayim, then Binyamin. Ephraim north of Binyamin from more or less from Yerushalayim to Beit El. Shiloh is in the heart of Ephraim. The northern area of Shiloh, of Ephraim, area of Shechem, more or less opposite the Yarden River. Lines are hard to draw on an ancient map because they didn't draw boundaries the way we draw boundaries on a map with a line. Boundaries in biblical maps are by names of cities, which city belonged to which tribe. But more or less, north of Ephraim is Manasseh. So Bnei Yosef is this combined area of Ephraim and Manasseh. And on the east side of the Arden, you have the area of the Gilad, Menasha, all the way up into the Bashan. Reuven is down here, south of the Cheshbon. Menasha is up here, more or less the area of the northern tip of the Gilad. What is all this in the middle? Here's Reuven. I'm assuming it belongs to Shevet Gad. And Menasha is up here. How did Ephraim end up in this picture? So, first of all, one thing I disagree with this map. I'm not sure that, that takes us off topic. How did Ephraim get into this conversation? How is Yar Ephraim between Machanaim and Gilad, which is this area right here? Right? Whoops. Right, this area right here. How did Ephraim come into this picture? Yar Ephraim, the forest of Ephraim. If anything, Yar Gad, Yar Menashe, Yar Gilad. Where's Ephraim in the story? So just to kind of identify locations, it's a fascinating story. If I go back to Sefer Yehoshua for a minute, I'll go back to Sefer Yehoshua. This is where this map comes from. In the end of Perek Yud Zayin, the dividing of the land of Israel according to tribes, Yeshua has a fascinating conversation with Mephraim and Menashe, and they come to him, Yamu B'nai Yosef, they come to Yehoshua, and they say to him, we have a problem. You've given us Lo Yimatzelanu Hahar, the hill country won't be enough for us, and we're too big. We're a very large tribe. Let's go back. Yosef, Ephraim, and Menashe, you've given us a small portion. We are a great people. We are a big, large tribe. Why have you only given us one portion? So Yeshua says, what are you talking about? I'm Ravata, if you're a great people. Alelecha Hayara. Go up to the forest, and go cut down the forest in the land of the Prizi and the Rephaim. And if the hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you, expand it. You have an entire forest. What essentially Yeshua says to them is, here's Ephraim, here's Menashe. And they come and they complain that they have these, it's hard to see here because, again, maps draw large territories by lines. But in biblical terms, they have a handful of hills and cities, Shiloh, Shechem, handful of cities in the mountain range. And they said, that's not enough for us. We don't have, and we can't go into the plain because the Canaanites are there with chariots and horses and chariots and tanks, and we can't go there. So Yeshua says to them, okay, you don't want to go into the plains. You have a lot of people. You want to expand your territory. There's an entire forest over here. There's an entire jungle. Go cut down the trees and settle it. Be happy with it. Ki atzlecha Ephraim, if Ephraim is too narrow for you. And so what it seems is, ki harya lecha ki yarhu uvereto, take the hill country and it'll be yours. And it's a forest. And cut it down. Mayalecha totzata. And the rest, and then you can have the area where the forest was. That will be yours. So what it seems from here is, and this is played out much later in Sefer Shoftim as well, is that Shevet Ephraim, because of their size of the population and the cattle and the sheep and the grazing land, etc., they needed extra territory. And so they begin to seep into this area of the Gilad. And so the Gilad was typically perceived to be, God is a little bit further south, the area of Menashe. In fact, it's the area of Menashe and Ephraim together. So Ephraim and Menashe share really both sides of the Arden, one of the great mysteries of Tanakh. And this area here is known as, between Machanaim and Ramot Gilad, is known as the forest of Yar Ephraim. We'll see when we get to Perek Yud Chet why that's significant. Yar Ephraim plays a big role in this story. Exactly what that is, we will see. But Yar Ephraim is the location where this battle takes place. And so we're here between Machanaim and the Gilad. So David is on the run. Did I close that map? Did I lose my map? What did I do? We can see it over here. Here is Machanaim. Here is Yavesh Gilad. David is on the run, and he builds, and he escapes to just over the Yabok River. I think Machanaim is further south. And he's greeted there by three individuals. Who are the three individuals? Coming back to our chapter. Who are the three individuals? Machir ben Shobi ben Nachash, Machir ben Amiel, and Bazilaya Giladi from Roglim. Who are they, and why do I care? So just to understand, these three individuals saved David's life. I want to put this in perspective. Hey, David is in Yar Ephraim. He's in a forest. This forest is enormous. It's actually a jungle. Because we'll see in the story as it unfolds, there are wild animals, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, right? There are wild animals in this jungle that kill people, and they do, they attack. There is a David is in territory that's not Shevet Yehudah. He's not surrounded by friends. Shevet Yehudah is his friends. The truth is, he's not even fighting Binyamin or Ephraim. He's fighting his own son. He's fighting Avshalom, who's now the king. David is in hiding. He comes tired, weak, weary. We saw that in the previous story with Avshalom. And suddenly he's greeted by three people who truly, really save his life. Ahi kivod David machanaima, fill in this moment, weary, tired, hungry, exhausted, running for his life in strange territory on the banks of the Abok River with Avshalom chasing him. And who does he see? Who comes to greet him there? Shobi ben Nachash, Machir ben Amiel, Bazilai Gilad. And we never even heard of these people before. We have never heard of these people before. We have no idea who it's talking about. And they come with supplies, and I would argue they come with more than supplies. Because from here to the next chapter, David's army grows to 20,000 people. I suspect they come not just with supplies, but also with ammunition, arms, soldiers, armies, right? These will now become David's allies. Who are they? It's a good question. Who are they? So let's take them one at a time. All right, we'll have to do this one at a time. No choice, because we'll get confused. Let's start with the first. Shovi ben Nachash miramat bnei Amon. Who is Shovi ben Nachash from Rabat bnei Amon? So first of all, Rabat bnei Amon is where? Here's Rabat Amon, part of the kingdom of Amon, right? Here's Rabat bnei Amon, here is Yavesh Gilad, here is more or less, this is the area that we're talking about for the battle between Machanayim and Gilad, and into this area comes Nachash, Shovi ben Nachash from Rabat bnei Amon. Who is Shovi ben Nachash? Who is he? So what do we do when we don't know what to do? We look at references, Mefarshim, commentaries, references. So let's start from the beginning. Do we know anybody by the name of Nachash from Ramat bnei Amon? Is the name familiar? I'll give you a hint. If I ask a trick question like that, the answer is probably going to be yes. So you kind of just can say yes, and then we can kind of go, okay, from then we can segue into from where, you know, then we can get into the stuff. So the answer is, his name familiar? Yes, of course. From where? Well, okay. So I'll tell you. Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. First time we meet this individual is in the story of Yavesh Gilad. No surprise, same area, right? Yavesh Gilad, Ammon, same region. Vayal Nachash Ha'amoni, Vayichan al Yavesh Gilad. Nachash, king of Ammon, camps opposite the area of Yavesh Gilad, meaning he attacks the city of Yavesh Gilad. Vayamu kol anshei Yavesh el Nachash, the people of Yavesh Gilad, said to Nachash, Krot lanu brit v'navdecha, state your terms, right? Make a covenant with us. We'll serve you. We will be loyal to you. You want to be my loyal servants? Here's what I demand, a condition I will make with you, that you gouge out your right eye, and then that way you will not be effective soldiers to rebel against me. I'll be happy to make you my servants. So the people of Yavesh responded and said, Henef lanu shivat yamim, give us 7 days. And after 7 days, we'll give you an answer. V'nishlecha malachim b'chagvu Yisrael, we'll send messengers to all of Israel. Yim'ein moshi otanu v'yetzanu elecha, if nobody comes to save us, meaning to conquer you and destroy you, then we will accept your terms. if you remember back to our study of Shmuel Aleph, it was a long time ago, I split this verse. I don't think they said to the people, to Nachash Melech Bnei Amon, I don't think they said to him, you know, we'll find somebody to destroy you, and if not, then we'll surrender to you. I think that was the part of the conversation. I think the Tanakh is telling us that that was what their mindset was, but they asked for 7 days. Nachash Bnei Amon gives it to them. And who comes to save the people of Yavesh Gilad? Who comes to wage war on behalf of Yavesh Gilad against Nachash Melech Bnei Amon? Newly appointed king of Israel by the name of... Say it. Somebody unmute and say.
Shaul.
Shaul, correct. Now, this is Shaul's first battle. This is Shaul's first campaign against Nachash Melech Bnei Amon. That's the first time we encounter this particular individual. Now, in our text, we're not talking about Nachash. We're talking about Shovi ben Nachash. Who is Shovi ben Nachash? That's a good question. Is he connected to the same family of Nachash Melech Bnei Amon? So the truth is that we encounter the story of Nachash HaAmoni again, a second time, in a completely different context. Namely, in Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud. The second time we find the story of Nachash is in just a few chapters ago, right? Where, you remember Shmuel Bet, it starts with, after the death of Shaul, the story of David's battle with Ammon, Aram, a major battle on the east side of the Jordan, ends up with the siege of the city of Ammon. And from that siege, David goes back to Yerushalayim. He sees Bathsheba, and the whole story of Bathsheba takes place, right? So this is all before that. This story begins with the death of the king of Ammon. And his son Hanun took over. Vayomer David, to which David then said, "Eseh chesed im Hanun ben Nachash, I'm going to show kindness to Hanun, son of Nachash, same Nachash Melech ben Amon, maybe, assuming it's the same Nachash. Kasher asa aviv imadi chesed. David likes to repay kindness with kindness. His father showed me kindness, meaning Nachash Melech ben Amon showed me kindness, so I will show him kindness, and I will send a delegation, Vayishtach David l'nachamo, and he sends a delegation to pay a shiva call to Hanun ben Nachash. That shiva call doesn't quite go well, because Vayavo avdei David al eretz ben Amon. So David's servants come to the land of Ammon, and the people of Ammon said to Hanun Adonihem, to Hanun their master, and said, "Hamchabed David et avicha beinecha, you think David is honoring your father? Shalach lecha menachamim, that he's coming to comfort you. Hala bavur chakora teiru uraglav ulavcha shalach David et avadav elecha. David's come to spy on you. David's come to conquer you." So Hanun, in response, takes David's servants, shaves their beard, cuts off half their garments, and sends them shamed back to in hiding. David hears about it, takes his entire army, goes to war, and so begins the war with Ammon. And Ammon calls in the reinforcements from the north, from Syria, called in the kingdom of Aram, and David ends up with a major battle in the Bashan, and from that battle goes back to Ammon, and the next parak begins. Vahilut Shivata Shana, a year later, the servants are going to battle. There's a siege of the city of Ammon, Vayashchitu et Bnei Ammon, Vayatsudu Araba, and David goes back to Yerushalayim. He's tired of war, and the story of Bathsheba emerges. So all of this, the entire story starts with David sending a delegation to pay a kindness to Hanun ben Nachash, because Nachash was kind to David. Now, what kindness did Nachash Melech ben Ammon pay to David? That story is not in Tanakh. And so what happens when we have a reference to a story that's not in the text of Tanakh itself? It's a field day for Midrashim to fill in the blank. And most likely what the Medrash picks up on is the most likely connection. Remember that Ammon and Moab are sister, I don't have the map here. What happened to the map? Let's go back to Yeshua Yitzhak. If you go back to the map, you'll see Ammon is here. Moab is south of Ammon. Ammon and Moab are always together. They're either paired together or they are separate, but they are united in alliance, certainly in this period of time, primarily because they're cousins. Ammon and Moab are descendants of the two sons of Lot. So they are, in fact, they are cousins too, but that's a separate issue. They are certainly, Edom, Moab, and Ammon are all in this region on the east side of the areas of Reuben and Gad. Why is that relevant? So here's what the Medrash says. Medrash depicts the following story. I didn't put the Medrash on this page. You know this Medrash. We discussed it at the time. When David was fleeing the house of Shaul, when David was on flight from Shaul, the first thing he does is he runs away from Shaul. The first thing he does is he takes his entire family and he takes them out of Bethlehem, arm's reach of Shaul, and deposits them somewhere safe that Shaul is not going to get to. Where does he deposit them? Under the protection of the king of his great, 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 great of the country that has an ancestral connection to David, namely, right? David is descended from Ruta Moab. Yeah, so David has this long history connection with Moab. He figures if he's going to find a safe haven for his family, it's going to be in the region of king of Moab, and that's exactly what he does. He takes his entire family. This is in Shmuel Aleph. Let's see where it is. Okay, I'm not going to find it quickly, but which reference, but David takes his family and he deposits them in the protection of the king of Moab. Remember that story? What happens to his family, wife, children? What happens to his family under the protection of Moab? The text doesn't tell us. But what we do know is that, I'm just trying to see if I can find it quickly. We do know is that David What we do know is that David never sees them again. There's no reference after that moment that David has any interaction with his wife and children or family that he deposited in the protection of the king of Moab. And so the Medrash suggests that the king of Moab actually kills them all. And that is, there's a reference, there's a hint to it in the way in which David attacks the people of Moab. In the beginning of Perek Chet, it says, "Vayach et Moab, vayimadedem bechevel ashkem otam arzu vayimaded shnei chavalim lamit b'lo chevel achayot v'ti Moab le David l'avadim nasei mincha." David comes and he smites Moab, and he smites them harshly. He destroys them. He kills them. He takes literally a third of the population and kills them. There's a suggestion that David's anger at Moab is because of the cruelty with which Moab had dealt with David's own family. Remember that story? We talked about that once a while back. So what's the kindness of the king of Ammon? So here the Medrash says that we know that there's some survivors of David's family that escape from the hands of Moab. And the Medrash suggests that there was a family, there was a remnant, one, two, it's unclear how many, that escaped from Moab. And where did they escape to? Ammon. If you are captive in the land of Moab, here south, and you manage to escape, where do you escape to? Your neighbor, the alliance between Moab and Ammon. And so you run to Ammon. And the king of Ammon, his name is Nahash. Nahash gives them safe haven, gives them refuge, gives them a place to escape to. Why was Nahash so kind to them if Moab was so cruel to them? Why do you think? Why was the king of Ammon so kind to David's family when Moab was so cruel to them?
Maybe they had some kind of a rivalry.
The background story. Nahash's first encounter with Israel is?
He sounds like a his son Hanun seems like a kind of a mean guy. So maybe he had a lot of enemies.
Maybe, but that's too far afield. Bring it back to the story. Where was the first encounter with Nahash in Tanakh?
The battle against Shaul, wasn't it?
Correct, against Shaul, the battle of Yavesh Gilad.
Right.
And so into his hands comes running the refugees from the house of David escaping Malach Moab. So Nahash reaches out to them and he brings them into his family and he saves their lives. How many of them we save, we don't know, but he saves their lives. The assumption is that Nahash, again, this is in the world of conjecture because none of this is in Tanakh, but in the world of conjecture, it's not hard to imagine that Nahash is kind to David's family because of his long harbored hatred or conflict with Shaul. And of course, at that period of time, David is on the run from Shaul. So classic Middle East philosophy, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? So Nahash is kind to David, and David in Perek Yud decides to try to pay back that kindness to his son Hanun ben Nahash. Eseh chesed im Hanun ben Nahash kasher asa aviv imadi chesed. Remember this word, we're going to come back to it a lot, the notion of David's loyalty to the concept of chesed. He owes kindness to show to him, so he shows kindness back. So that's the story of Hanun ben Nahash. Hanun ben Nahash, unlike David, saw David's people as spies. And Hanun ben Nahash says, I'm not my father. I'm not going to be kind to David. And so he takes David's army and he publicly shames them. Well, that doesn't go well for him because the end result is don't cross David in that way. And David takes his army and goes out to war in a major fashion. That's Hanun ben Nahash. But we're not talking even about Hanun ben Nahash. Who are we talking about? Shobi ben Nahash. Who is Shobi ben Nahash? I have now Nahash. I have Hanun ben Nahash. And who is Shobi ben Nahash? Not to mention the fact that the last class that we had somebody else by the name of... I'm not even going to go back to rehash that story, but we also had Avigail bat Nahash. And the whole question of whether Avigail bat Nahash is the same Nahash or not. All right, and it gets even more complicated. But who is Shobi ben Nahash? So here the Mefarshim say the following. Says Rashi, and here it's a split. Mefarshim is split over this. I'll share with you several options. One option, Shobi ben Nahash, says Rashi, who Hanun ben Nahash? It's the same person. It's the same person. Number one, why isn't he dead? Number two, why isn't he, because David conquered Hanun ben Nahash. Why is he not called Hanun? And why is he being kind to David when he was being so cruel earlier? So the Medrash says, again, same Medrash, Shavi ben Nachash, Hanun ben Nachash, Lamed Koshmo Shavi, why is he called Shavi? Says Rebbe, Sheyasham v'titzro. He conquered his yetzer. He himself can control himself for a moment. Chachamim amim. No. Sh'asat tshuva v'deit. He is a full throttled tshuva. This Chanun ben Nachash, he became a bal tshuva. He became totally devoted. Chanun ben Nachash becomes Shav, Shuvi, Shuvi ben Nachash. Okay. Comes along the Hadak and he says, I don't understand. How can that be? If he's Chanun ben Nachash, then why didn't David kill him? Why isn't he called Melech Chanun ben Nachash? Why is he Shuvi ben Nachash? Why is he, Chanun was a king. If he's the same person as Shuvi, why is he not called Melech? So of all the possibilities, I like this one the best. Shuvi ben Nachash, 19th century commentary known as Moshe Yitzchak Ashkenazi or Ho'il Moshe, says Shuvi ben Nachash, ulai achiv shel Chanun ben Ach ben Amram. Kings don't only have one son, they have many sons. Chanun ben Nachash was, you'll forgive me, was a snake. Took after his father's name. Right? Chanun ben Nachash was anything but Chanun v'Rachum. Chanun ben Nachash, the names are backwards, right? Nachash was kind to David. Nachash and Chanun was cruel to David. Shuvi was his brother. Let's assume for the moment Shuvi was another member of the family, a son, a cousin, somebody from the royal family, somebody in a position of power. Somebody comes from a Mat B'nei Amon who's not the king, but who is somebody who remembers that his father had a very warm relationship with David, and David even went out of his way to pay the family the respects when Nachash died. That's in Tanakh. And Chanun repaid David with cruelty that brought that wrath of David back down upon the entire kingdom. And Shuvi understood that David was really trying to repay his father's kindness and chesed. And so suddenly Shuvi ben Nachash shows up at a critical moment to share supplies and army and re-energize David's camp, Shuvi ben Nachash, to repay the kindness that David paid to Nachash for the kindness that Nachash had paid to David. And you understand the concept of paying it forward. Right? And that's this spiral of chesed that comes back constantly into the story. Shuvi ben Nachash, maybe another branch of the family. Chanun was cruel to David, but Shuvi was waiting for that opportunity, perhaps, to be kind to David and to come to David at a moment of critical need. Option I like. I think it fits the text. It fits the context as well, which is even more important for me. Okay, so we've identified number one, Shuvi ben Nachash, brother of Chanun ben Nachash, who repays David's kindness with kindness of his own. Next on our list, who is Machir ben Amiel from Lodavar? Any takers? We are in Shmuel Bet Perek Yud, the story of Chanun ben Nachash. Let's go back one chapter. Shmuel Bet Perek Tet, Vayomer David. This is, it's kind of a chapter in the middle of nowhere, unclear why, in the middle of the story of we have this reference to Mephibosheth, but it comes here in the story. Vayomer David, achi yesh od notar lebet Shaul. So if anybody left from the house of Shaul after Shaul died and his children died, and Yonatan, who was his deep, close friend, died, ve'aseh imo chesed b'avo Yonatan. David wants to repay the kindness of Yonatan, and he owes Yonatan this debt. Whom can he pay it to? Does Yonatan have any heirs? U'lebeit Shaul ever ushmo Tziva. Yes, Shaul had a servant. His name is Tziva. We've encountered him many times. So David calls him over and he says to him, "Ata Tziva, yes, I am Tziva. Vayomer HaMelech, ha'efes od ish lebet Shaul. Is there anybody left for the house of Shaul? Veseimo chesed elokim, so that I can show him kind of divine kindness, kindness that I owe him because of an oath I took in the name of God. Vayomer Tziva HaMelech, od ben Yonatan. Yes, there's a son to Yonatan. Necherag laim. Not only that, he's a son, but he's lame on his feet. He can't walk. Vayomer lo hamelech efo hu? Where does he live? Vayomer tziva lamelech. Hineu beit machir ben Amiel milo davar. He is in the house. He's being raised as a foster home by this guy in the middle of the Gilad. His name is Machir ben Amiel, and he lives out somewhere in Lodavar, which is somewhere in the Gilad. Near Yavesh Gilad, which is where Shaul had, remember Yavesh Gilad were the people who went, besides the war with Nachash many years ago, when Shaul was killed and taken captive by the Plishtim, it was the people of Yavesh Gilad that went and risked their lives to go and steal the body back to give him proper burial. Remember that story? Right, so that's the same Yavesh Gilad. Lo Davar is near Yavesh Gilad. Vayishlach HaMelech David vayikacheu mibet Machir ben Amiel milo Davar. Mephibosheth comes to the palace, and of course David pays. It says to him, Ki aso esech imcha chesed ba'avur Yonatan avicha. Going to repay you the kindness that I owe your father, and therefore you will stay here in the palace. You will eat at my table, and I will return to you all the fields and property that Tziva had stolen from Shaul Avicha. Right, that whole conflict with Tziva is a separate issue, but it's connected to this story. So, who is Machir ben Amiel milo davar? He is the resident of the area of the Gilad who had raised Mephibosheth after the death of the house of Shaul. So the number two person on this list who comes to David's aid is Machir ben Amiel, who lives in the Gilad, who raised Mephibosheth after the death of Shaul in his loyalty to the house of Shaul. You with me? You follow the pattern? You follow the pattern? These are old threads of chesed from David's life that suddenly come back to his aid at critical moments. You see the pattern? And the third one is, third one's a little bit tricky because we don't know for sure. I'm back into the world of conjecture. Barzillai Giladi. Who is Barzillai Giladi? We don't know for sure because he's never mentioned before. He will be mentioned afterwards. David, on his deathbed, says to Shlomo, actually, I think I put it on the source page. David, on his deathbed, as he's sort of his last will and testament to Shlomo, says to him in Malachim Aleph, Perek Bet, this is a book later, he says to Shlomo, the children of Barzillai Giladi, you need to repay their kindness. You need to be loyal to them the way I was to Mephibosheth, and they shall eat at your table. He can karvu elai bevarchim ipnei Avshalom achicha, because when I was running from Avshalom, they came to me at an hour of need, not just because they brought some soup to the army, but they came to stand with me at my greatest moment of need, and they brought with them supplies and an entire army. And so that was Barzillai HaGiladi. Now, we don't know anything about Barzillai HaGiladi from Roglim. Really, we don't, except that there's a name association. And the name association is to Adriel ben Barzillai HaMecholati. Adriel HaMecholati, or Adriel ben Barzillai HaMecholati, is Merav's wife, Merav's husband. Who is Merav? Do you remember when David first meets Shaul? Shaul has two daughters, Merav and Michal. He falls in love with Merav. He asks for Merav's hand in marriage. Shaul pulls a page out of Lavan's book and says, no, I've already married Merav off to Adriel HaMecholati, or Adriel ben Barzillai HaMecholati, and therefore he gives David Michal. And when David loses favor with Shaul, Shaul takes Michal and marries her off to Palti ben Laish. Shaul has a thing with this pattern, but Adriel ben Barzillai HaMecholati is Merav's husband. Now, if he's Merav's husband, it could be that Barzillai HaGiladi is the same father of Adriel ben Barzillai, meaning that this Barzillai Giladi could very well be David's Merav Bat Shaul's father-in-law. Right? Barzillai, because Merav is married to Adriel ben Barzillai, Agiladi, or Hamacholati, could very well be Merav's father-in-law, who also, even though there's no connection to David per se, right? David never marries Merav, but they had this, but they certainly had a loyalty to each other, and ultimately Barzillai comes to his aid at this critical time. So, put it all together. Machir ben Amiel comes from the story of David's chesed to Mephibosheth. Shovi ben Nachash comes from the story of David's chesed to Nachash. Barzillai Giladi may come from the relationship and the honor and the dignity of Merav. We already had the story of Michal and the well in Bachurim that saved the two spies that might have been connected to the house of Palti ben Laish. And all of the pieces of David's past are coming together at this moment, in this critical juncture, to support David in his rehabilitation and in his ability to stand against the army of Avshalom. So it's a fascinating moment, not least of which because the key thread that links all these three person people together is, what just happened? Right, the key thread that links all these people together is the chesed that David had done to various moments in his lifetime in the past. Chesed to Yonatan, chesed to Mephibosheth, chesed to, therefore to Machir ben Amiel, chesed to Nachash, chesed to Shovi ben Nachash, to Hanun ben Nachash, comes back in the form of Shovi ben Nachash. Chesed with Mirav, chesed with Michal, ultimately, and that side of the equation. So that's not an accident. That is, come back to what I said at the beginning of the shiur, which is that you have this contrast between the world of Shalom's rebellion that could have destroyed David completely, and at that last moment of darkness, the last critical second, Avshalom makes a mistake, chooses the wrong plan, enables David to escape. And from that moment of divine providence that enters into the conversation to enable David to return, one story after another, all of the acts of chesed of David's past, Michal, Merav, Shovi ben Nachash, Machir ben Amiel, Barzillai Giladi, all converge to enable David to reestablish himself and to turn the table on the rebellion. So that's sort of the kind of the arrow that everything here points to in terms of the midah of chesed of David. All right, we have 3 minutes left. And in the 3 minutes left, I want to pull one more thread of the story together. And that is that the notion that David's kingdom is restored because of the chesed that David had fulfilled to each of these individuals, and the chesed comes back to him, we've just identified, that's not an accident. Because it all starts from the root of David's past. What is the root of David's past? Where does David come from? David's malchus, more than anything else, is defined by the midah of chesed, by the character trait of his kindness that he bestows upon even those who don't deserve it, even against Shaul, right? Shaul was his archenemy. Shaul tried to destroy him, and David spared his life, not once, but twice. Right? That was David. There's one story of quote-unquote cruelty in David's kind of repertoire, and that's the story of Bathsheba and Uriah-Hitti. But that's really the exception. The general rule to David's life has been one act of chesed after another. And you see that here converging in all of these stories as one. Why is it significant? Because go back to David's ancestry. Go back to the story of where David comes from. David's Malchus stems from the world of Ruth. It stems from Megillat Ruth. And what made Ruth special was her chesed to Naomi, her chesed to Boaz, Boaz chesed to her. It's an amazing medrash, Rus Rabbah. Pasuk in Megillat Ruth, where Naomi says to her, "Yas Hashem imachem chesed kasher asitem imametim imati." We don't have a time to unpack this. Maybe we'll do it at a different time. But the chesed theme that runs through Megillat Ruth from one end to the other says the Megillah Amud Abizira, Megillah Zu, referring to Megillat Ruth, ain balotuma v'latara v'laisiv v'laheter. It's not a halachic book. It doesn't discuss halachot of malchus or anything else like that, but rather lama nichtava. Why was it written? To teach us the merit, the reward for those who convey kindness to each other. Megillah Rut is the Megillah Shekula Chesed. And it all stems from Rut's Chesed. Rut is a Moabite. And if there's anything that defines Moab, remember that story of Moab who kills David's family and Nahash and the cruelty of Moab. That's characteristic of Moab. Moab is known for that cruelty. Moab is known for being the descendants or the ancestry of Sodom. The Torah says about Moab that the reason we're never allowed to accept converts from Moab is because they were cruel to you when you left Egypt and they didn't repay you with kindness. Except that Ruth pulled herself out of the world of Moab and therefore is a thread that represents the thread of Chesed. That's who she is. That's what she is. And Megillat Rut ends with the ancestry of David. The whole point of Megillat Rut is to highlight the link between Rut and David. And so in the end of David's critical moment, when really this is the make or break moment in David's life, and he's sitting there, this can go either way. It can go towards Avshalom, it can go towards David. This is that critical moment, the divine providence that engages Hashem Tzivah Lafer at Tzat Achitofel in order to bring down the rebellion of Avshalom, the merit that seeps up from between the text, the merit of David that enables him to deserve this return to the kingdom, is the merit that is highlighted by these three individuals. Shovi ben Nachash, the chesed with Amon, Mechir ben Amiel, the chesed with Yonatan and Mephibosheth, Mazilah Giladi, the chesed with the house of Shaul. And David's whole world is restored because of the midah of David's kingdom, which is the character trait of chesed. So forgive me for going a minute or two over, but I wanted to pull all these threads together. I think it is one of the most powerful moments in the story of Avshalom. And I will therefore stop speaking and open it up for questions. Comments, questions, observations. Mike is yours.
Very complicated.
Yes, it's complicated. I agree. But
Rabbi, if I can ask, it's complicated.
But I think the theme is
it's a mystery story.
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Or maybe
for sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This idea with the chesed.
Yeah.
Is that why the idea of Mashiach will come from David?
So Mashiach comes from David because David establishes the dynasty of Malchut Yisrael that God promises will remain forever. Why God promises him that his kingdom remains forever is based on, I think, two factors. One is chesed. One is that defines David's characteristic, unlike Shaul, unlike the kingdoms of the north. And the other is the humility that comes with leadership. David shows in a number of places a sense of humility towards the Navi, towards the role of right? There's a spiritual connect side to David that's very powerful. I think they're connected, but it's in Tanakh, it's more the humility side of it that enables him to be able to make mistakes and then pull back from them. And that's a big piece of it. But yeah, that's sort of the story.
I have a question.
Yeah. Oh,
it's very interesting where these people came from. And I'm just wondering, like, what percent accuracy do you think that is, that those are the people, like, are you just sort of conjecture, or do you think that that's like 75% accurate that it would be of them? Or I'm just kind of curious what your feeling is.
The only one in that group that we know absolutely for sure who he is Machir ben Amiel. Of the three, we know his story, right? He was the foster father who raised Mephibosheth and David repays that kindness. The other two we don't know. We're conjecturing. It's based on Midrashim, but I think it's a reasonable conjecture. Reasonable enough to fit the theme of what's going on in this parak, which is the restoration of David's kingdom based on previous acts of kindness that seep into that are part of David's life. So am I 100% sure? Anytime I use the word conjecture, I'm never 100% sure, but I'm confident enough to share it. So that's my answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a question about timeline. A little confusing to me. Working backwards, you said David went over the Yarden overnight.
More or less.
Was it that fast? How far behind was Avshalom? When did the boys go to tell him? I'm having a little trouble putting all this into
Avshalom comes much later. There's a lot of different timelines in the same chapter. Avshalom shows up in the Gilad. He has to gather his whole army together. So from the time that David reaches Machanaim, it's going to take, he will be there for a while. But he gets there. Yeah.
I think it gets there overnight.
It gets there overnight. I'll tell you, it says so. It says so in Vayakom David v'chol am asher ito v'yavu et hayarden ad or haboker.
Right.
He crosses over the Yarden overnight, meaning he's running, and he's running for his life. So the flight for his life, he takes everybody with him and he crosses over the Jordan overnight. And then he heads to Machanaim. Avshalom is going to take a while till he gets there. He has to gather his whole army together. So how long that takes, we don't know. But the point of the story, there's several timetables going on. There's David, the timetable that's immediate, David's arrival in Machanaim, and then the other people who come to his aid. And then we're given a foreshadow of what's coming in the next chapter. Avshalom is going to show up in the Gilad with his whole army. Right? But that's much later. Not much later. That's probably a while later.
Okay.
But David's story is overnight.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for joining. Thank you for listening. You. And I hope I haven't confused you too much.
Thank you.
Next week, we start chapter 18 and we start a whole new story. So here we go. Have a good night.
Bye.